Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Good evening. You are listening to Love Sport Radio. This is the Chelsea Fan Show. Me, Matt Beadle, here with Stamford Chidge and Jonathan Kidd of the Chelsea Fancast.
Kido.
Hello.
Kido. Our first one, Jonathan Kidd. I've been told many, many things about you.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing what is going to be produced.
To Chidge speaks a lot and I just go, yeah, Chidge.
That's all rubbish. That's all. Quite the opposite.
I'm like a cajoler. You know, I'm like one of those guys who goes, come on, sing. Come on, guys. I say, come on, Chidge, get it together.
He's very nice, Matt. He's much nicer than he appears. I've missed you. I feel like I haven't seen you for months.
Well, you haven't.
I know. When was the last time we did a show together?
A month ago.
I gave you a month off.
6 weeks.
You see, you are so favourited, you see, because I'm the gaffer, obviously. But you are so my favourite.
And I'm your amanuensis. Do you know what that means, anybody?
I'm not sure I want to know.
No, yeah.
It doesn't sound very nice.
Little Clark. I'm your Clark.
Are you?
C-L-E-R-K. Okay.
Like a punker one.
Hello, mate. I'm like that. Hello, mate. Hello, Chidge. What did you carry your bag, Chidge?
I gave you a month off, mate. Not everybody gets a month off.
Thank you very much. No, I came in that weekend you were away. I came in with Clayton.
You did.
And that was fun because we talked about a couple of the friendlies.
You did. So there you go.
We'll talk about them again tonight, won't we?
Matt, well?
I'm very well, mate. Yeah, absolutely. We're looking forward to what we've got coming up. Of course, we're just going to discuss some of the pre-seasons, obviously Reading and Salzburg. Goal fests.
Worryingly so.
Yeah. Why are you worried?
Well, because the defence was awful.
Well, we'll get to that.
I know, but you asked me why. Well, yeah, but all right, can I give you a positive? Pulisic took those two goals fantastically. Yeah. You remember Morata being in that situation when he just missed every single time. Pulisic, calm, speed.
Nerveless. Yeah,
and
wonderful.
He hardly did anything else in the game, mind you, but he just went,
did you watch the... I watched the whole thing.
Well,
I'll fess up here because, you know, for reasons of transparency. I don't really have to admit this at all, Matt, do I? But I'm going to because it's kind of way I roll.
But am I going to make a judgment of you as a result?
I don't really care. I didn't see the games. Right. I had better things to do.
Oh, Chidge.
I don't even remember when it was. When was it?
Chidge. Last Sunday.
I was working. I did. Matt wouldn't have been here, but I was broadcasting when we were playing Reading, and I paid my £1.99 to Guy Lawrence, not personally, you understand, but it might as well be.
I got a refund.
And I was watching it whilst I was broadcasting, so I didn't see the
wonder goal.
The Goodnight Vienna game.
Oh, you didn't know, right. Salzburg game.
Seen the Pedro goal, though.
Well, wonderful. That was on Twitter.
What was that all about?
Not only goal of the season, goal of any season.
That was a goal good enough to win the Grand National, the FA Cup.
It would come first.
The boat race.
Get over Beecher's book.
Kenneth Woolston. That's probably the greatest line of commentary ever, I think. If you haven't seen it, kids, go and... Matt should know this, although he was a bit too young. But Bobby Charlton. He scored an absolutely storming goal from about classic Bobby Charlton, 30 yards out. I think it was against Liverpool too, even better, at Old Trafford. And it was one of those goals that just went straight into the top corner. And Kenneth Wilson Holmes was commentating. He said, oh, that was a goal worthy of the FA Cup final, the Grand National, the Pope. And just listed these whole loads of spots. And it's just hilarious. It's brilliant. Anyway, we digress.
Well,
the goal is an interesting talking point, which will then...
Thanks, Matt, for bringing it back to reality.
No problem, we lost it for a second there, didn't we? But a great start to the show. You two should just do it by yourselves, to be fair.
No, we'd have so much fun.
We're doing selfies now. But there we go. The goal was, of course... an incredible strike. And you talk about the fact that it should be goal of the season. Sadly, when we do see great goals in pre-season, they don't count. So your Puskas Awards and all the rest of it, they absolutely get forgotten. Like Spurs winning trophies
in pre-season, they don't count either. Have they made a DVD yet?
You know that was made out of bits of Skoda. Did you know that? The Audi Cup? Yeah.
I've just made that up. It should have been made out of bits of Audi.
No, because they make Skodas.
Really?
And Skodas are more...
Audi makes Skodas?
Yeah, it's the same car. And Seat's the same car.
I look at Skodas in a whole new light.
You must.
Anyway, we digress.
Yeah.
Matt.
Sorry, Matt.
Guys, not a problem.
Matt was just in despair there. Did you see that?
You're right about Pedro's goal is that you can do that every day in pre-season. You can do it every day in training. Yeah. If you're not doing it when it matters. And you hear so many tales of these players. How many times have we seen that goal that Ravel Morrison scored for England under-21s in training? The, like, volley Cruyff gets wheeled out. Oh, remember this goal? Yes, it was in a training session.
You say this, Matt, but I, you know, It's really funny, actually, with poor old Pedro. I've always liked Pedro. You know that, JK. I mean, we've always been big fans of Pedro. He does have that in him. I mean, we've seen it. Mm. We haven't seen it come together so perfectly as it did in that goal. But you could see that he's more than capable of scoring goals like that. He's an incredibly gifted player.
Except what's happened to him over the last couple of seasons is he has a good half and then he runs around like a Duracell bunny.
I love it most when he tries to beat 15 people in his own penalty area.
Which he succeeds and then gives the ball away. That was right. Frank Sinclair used to do
that. He's like a terrier, isn't he? With a ball. I love that goal was just superb, though, I've got to say. I mean, it was fantastic.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Can we have more of that this season, please?
Well, also, can I just point out that the assist from Barkley was also...
Yeah, totally.
Who seems to have come into his own...
Totally.
Playing under Frank. It's very interesting watching what Frank's done.
Why do you think that might be, Jonathan?
I think perhaps he's just been told to do what he wanted to do. But
does it mean the coat hanger's been removed from his posterior so he can actually play with freedom?
Yeah, from his as Alex would have it, from his rather...
She likes his derriere.
Yeah, she loves it. When she sat with me, she insisted on taking pictures of his bum when he was on...
You know what?
The side.
There are two things at play here. Because, I don't mind having a dig at you-know-who, but... we did say, and I said this particularly last season, that he might not be the brightest tool in the box, possibly, which is, I don't mean to do him down if he's got like a double first from Oxford or something that I didn't know about.
Has he?
Bottom line is, he is an instinctive player. There is something of Barkley that reminds, Gascoigne. He's got something of the Gascoigne about him. When he picks up a ball,
which he did at Everton,
runs at people. He has that ability to just play on sheer instinct and beat people for fun. The minute you try and box him in and tell him what to do, which clearly Sarri would, because that was Sarri's way. You took something away from his game. Now, I hope we see the Barkley that I think he has the potential to come this season. And I think I said it last week, Matt will probably remember, but I also thought, he reminds me of a bit of Joe Cole. And of course, Lamp's played with Joe Cole. He will understand that kind of player. However, you still have to have some discipline. So you can't have him running around just doing what he wants on instinct all
None
the time.
Of them can.
There has to be
None
a balance.
Of them. Absolutely.
I tell you what, I think Barkley this season could be our player to watch. I really do.
I sincerely hope so.
I think you're bang on, Chidge. And I think the comparison to Paul Gascoigne is also bang on. That was the first thing that people said when he first came on the scene at Everton. Everyone thought, right,
well,
this
he broke
is
into England. Didn't he,
yeah,
really
this is a realistic Paul Gascoigne comparison, which you hear so many times. You heard it with Jack Wilshere. You hear it with so many midfielders. A young English midfielder that comes through, we all get a bit carried away. He can play a through ball. Right, it's going to be the next best thing. It's going to be the next Gazza. Yeah. But with Barkley, I think we're now seeing, especially in this pre-season, someone coming of age. And you're right, Frank Lampard has definitely got a lot to do with that.
I reckon so. And I think the point that he played with Joe Cole, who I think is quite a similar player. And, Joe... The thing about players like Joe Cole and Ross Barkley, because they have this just such a wonderful natural gift that they've been playing like that since they were about five, they just have this, and Gazza was the same, they just have a huge enthusiasm for football and a delight in their own ability, and they're the kind of players that you need to encourage and put an arm around, and if you are going to criticise them, don't crush them.
And don't put them into a stricture that forces them to try and play a certain way that they don't seem to be capable of. I have to say, I don't think many of the Chelsea players last year were capable of playing what Sarri wanted. I think that was one of the major problems with it. They tried, but they were not able to interpret that.
If you read that wonderful report that was in Football London from that Napoli fan, in a sense, Sarri didn't invent Sarri ball. It was actually the Napoli players when they wanted to go to the 4-3-3, and they just had the kind of players already at his disposal who could do that. But let's not go down repeated arguments. I go back to this whole enthusiasm and the delight in playing. I really do think if you put an arm around players like that, you get the best out of them. And I've got a great Joe Cole story for you both here. I just remember because I used to know a scout who told me about Joe Cole 4 years before he came on the scene at West Ham. And he was one of the most sought after kind of 10, 11 year olds in the game at the time. Chelsea was sniffing around. Everton was sniffing around. The scout that I knew was from Everton was an Everton Arcala. Scout.
We'll do our best kind of
no,
scout.
No, Jonathan. Okay. A football scout.
Okay, thank you.
But he tells me a story about when Joe Cole was really very young and on West Ham's books by then. And they played Chelsea and Zola was around. And I think one of the coaches or somebody was saying to Joe Cole, that's Franco Zola. He's one of the best players in the league, one of the most skillful players in the game. And, of course, they're all warming up. And Zola's doing all these kind of little key PRPs and fancy kind of flicks that you do. And Joe Cole kind of looked at and said, yeah, well, I can do that. And just basically did it for twice as long, twice as better. I mean, the amount of talent that kid had was remarkable.
That's so
and
interesting.
And confidence.
I thought it was going to go the opposite way there, because normally when you hear about these kids coming in...
He was about 14.
Real? Oh, wow, okay.
Right.
So full of beans.
Yeah, totally.
Gosh, that's... So I wonder how Zola took to that.
I doubt he would
have imagine mattered. The fact that he was so young, it probably wouldn't have mattered. If Cole had been a bit older, it might have been an issue.
Yeah, well, maybe not. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? We'll never know.
A bit embarrassed about it.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about Zola, of course, is that, you know, he had all that natural ability, but he worked harder than everybody else as well. And actually, Frank Lampard, as Chelsea supporters will know, you know, got his work ethic from Franco Zola. Franco would always be the last off the training pitch. And Franco thought, yeah, but he's really, really good, and yet he works harder than everybody else. Maybe there's something in that. Frank got that legacy from him.
There's that great Zola story about golf, isn't there? About the fact that he couldn't play golf when he first arrived, and Ruud Gullit pulled him aside and said, "Look, these English lads, they love to play golf, so you need to learn it." And he locked himself away, not for the whole time, but he locked himself away to play golf, and for about 6 months just solidly played golf in his spare time, and eventually was one of the best players at the club. They couldn't believe it. So, yeah, a very good player. But and good sticking on Ross Barkley, you mentioned the ball over top for Pulisic in that game against Salzburg, which is incredible, and then the ball to Pedro as well. And I think that's what's going to be key. You've got those players, and especially Pulisic, who we'll come on to as well, and the fact that he had a bit more freedom, I think, against Salzburg. Just seemed to be very direct, very attacking. Just the type of player that's going to fit in quite nicely behind Olivier Giroud or whoever it is that plays up top.
I'm not convinced it'll be Giroud. I don't think he deals very well with the pace of the Premier League. And I'm not convinced it's Abraham, and I'm not even convinced it's Batshuayi. But I don't know though. He scores though, doesn't he? You know, this is the problem. He's in the 6 yard box.
Got.
But do you need somebody who runs? You need somebody who's got the athleticism and the. I felt Abraham at. I mean, we're judging just on pre-season games, which you shouldn't.
I know.
But at the weekend, I didn't.
And from what we know already.
I mean,
the bottom line is that whether we like it or not,
it's going to be one of them.
That's all we've got. But we've got the same problem that we had last season. And the problem that we had last season is absolutely the fact that, you know, we don't have any world-class strikers.
Which, of course, we'd love to have.
You know, that's the reality. We've also got the added issue now. And I think we're beginning to see some sort of, you know, movement towards what we're going to see Frank do this season tactically or systemically. And I mean, I think he's going to start 4-2-3-1 basically, but I don't think he's going to be rigidly stuck to 4-2-3-1 every game. I think Frank's learnt enough from the kind of managers that coached him that you have to be quite fluid and you have to change things in game. So if he wants to go to 4-3-3 in game or 4-4-2, he will.
And
but I think he's going to start 4-2-3-1.
You must remember that he has been managed by and coached.
It's pretty rubbish managers, really.
Completely for Ancelotti.
Mourinho. Benitez. Who's he? Benitez.
Sorry to have mentioned
Come
him.
Come on.
He's not a bad manager.
Okay, I see your Benitez and I raise you Andre Villas-Boas.
Yeah, but that didn't last very long, did it?
Luis Felipe Scolari.
Yeah, that didn't last long either. He was part of the group that got rid of him, wasn't he?
Avram Grant.
Yeah, but before that, it was Mourinho.
It's a bit like, what have the Romans ever done for us? Anyway, you know, I don't think he's going to stick rigidly to 4-2-3-1.
No.
But I think what we're also seeing, aside of any system that he's playing, is that he wants his teams to play with a lot of pace, and he wants to be very direct. So he doesn't want to be fannying around, you know, doing 25 passes before we see an opening. In other words, he doesn't want to pull the opposition out of shape. He wants to just catch them out. And you need pace to do that.
But they're still doing the pressing, though.
Yeah, and they're doing the pressing too, which, of course, wins the ball and allows them to do that. So if somebody wins the ball quite high up the pitch, whether it be one of the wingers or it be one of the midfielders, you know, the forward needs to be, like, attuned to that and making that run so that they can be put through really quickly. That's the difference. Now, Giroud, he doesn't do that.
No. Nope.
Batshuayi?
He doesn't do
that. He's a goal hanger.
Yeah.
Tammy Abraham can.
Yeah.
But will he be good enough and ready? That's the question.
That is definitely the question. Well, interesting points, Phil, especially Jonathan, not thinking that either of those three strikers are good enough to start up top.
He's
so
a hard
will?
Man, man. He's
he
a
is
very,
a very
hard, man.
Hard man.
Well, no, but you want to have somebody like, you know, once you've been weaned on Drogba and you've been weaned on, I don't think anybody else is good enough. A comparison with Drogba, you want to have that standard of of centre-forward. We hoped it would be Morata, who at the beginning looked as if he was going to deliver, but ultimately just became this strange man who fell over and became offside. So,
indeed he did. Well, that was the attack. Next up, it's all about the defence.
Mm-hmm. Love Sport.
Yep, you're listening to Love Sport. This is your Chelsea fans. It's a hive of activity, Jonathan Kidd.
Ooh, his dander is up, man.
My dander is well and truly up.
Sifting through the Evening Standard in that break. I'll tell
Save
you what,
it to the next
he
part.
Is not happy. But we're going to bring that up in the next part, Jonathan.
Thank
so
you.
Our listeners
Don't
will
worry.
Be waiting.
I've
with
got a list of
breath.
Other things that aren't on the script, by the way.
Now, we like to go off piste.
Yeah.
So that's not a problem. But we were talking about attack
before
the break. We were talking about who is going to score the goals. And interestingly, just a word again on Ross Barkley and the fact that he's never got double figures in a season for either goals or assists. Now, he had that one very, very decent season in 2015-16 for Everton, which was, of course, a terrible season for Chelsea when Jose Mourinho was sacked again for the second time at Stamford Bridge. But apart from that, apart from his 8 goals and 8 assists that season, he's never, ever eclipsed it. His pre-season form would suggest that maybe, just maybe, he's going to. But we're going to be looking at the defence now, because watching those two games against Reading and Salzburg, the thing that stuck out for me was the fact that Chelsea seemed quite susceptible at set pieces. A bit dodgy.
And everything else.
Well, yeah, but I mean, certainly the set pieces, and it looks like nothing's necessarily changed in pre-season. Although, you know, we have to have the caveat that it is pre-season. But it is a bit worrying.
Who was the common denominator of ineptitude in that?
Well, I think Louise.
Exactly. Is,
you know, quite possibly. He does like having a brain fart. But as a man prone to the odd brain fart myself, I'm perhaps a little bit more forgiving.
Yeah.
But, you know, let's see where we are. You can't have it both ways, and I get this. We can't, on the one hand, be going, oh, Pedro, woo, oh, Barkley, woo, oh, lots of goals, and then going, but the defence is rubbish, and saying, but it's only pre-season. You can't have it both ways. But,
well, I think we can.
You know,
I think we're allowed to say that. We're allowed to notice that things aren't working, or things are.
I'll tell you what. I mean, here, the set pieces for me are a bigger worry, because set pieces have been an issue for a long time. You know, not just last season, but under Conte they were a problem. Under Mourinho they were a problem. I wonder if that also might be down to losing certain personnel. You know, losing John Terry, key at set pieces, losing Didier Drogba, massive at set pieces. Always very much part of Chelsea's set piece defending. So it may be more complex than we're seeing. I mean, I think you're right. Louise can have his brain fart.
But I don't
think it's just him.
I'm worried about Dave as well. He's not the player that he was.
This was a debate last week,
yeah.
Mr. Kidd, in that both. Both Stamford Chidge, you were quite clearly still very pro, Dave.
Look at the last proper game we had.
Against Arsenal.
Yeah. How was he then?
Great. He still can't centre.
No, but, you know, there are going to be deficiencies in his game that were always there.
Why don't they... Well, I would hope that the eventual back four would be James.
Yeah.
Instead of Dave. Rudiger. Christensen. And perhaps put Dave on the left where he was before. It's not going to happen, but it's not going to be Alonso. So will it be Emerson? I think everybody's hoping it'll be Emerson, who seems to have been slightly more involved in this setup rather than trying to interpret what Sarri wanted. It'll be really interesting to see what he comes up with.
Marco and I think that he'll go for Zuma. No, we think he'll be very predictable in his first 11 against United.
Oh, completely.
And I think he's going to go for if you're an experienced player and you're fit and available, you're going to get picked.
But I think,
just let me answer your question.
Oh, okay.
Well, you did ask me a question, I'll answer it. I'm with you on that. Zuma? You don't fancy Zuma in this? You're not a Zuma fan?
There was a free Zuma campaign that was started today. I don't know whether you guys
saw
this.
With every packet of cornflakes.
#FreeZuma. Everton fans obviously kicking this off because they want him back at Goodison Park. If he was to leave, would you be disappointed with that? Do you want him to stay at Stamford Bridge?
I personally have never felt that he was the... He's not as good as Rudiger, and I don't think he's as good as Christensen. So why do you need to have him there?
I can't argue with that. You know, I love him to pieces because his middle name is Happy. You know, so anybody called Kurt Happy Zuma gets my vote. But I have you. I still think I won't get involved in Louise bashing. I mean, we
love him completely.
I'm not saying you're bashing him, but a lot of people do. Yeah. And a lot of people focus on him. And I think, you know, Louise, you know, has won it all. He's our most experienced and probably longest standing player now. he starts for me. It's who partners Luiz? Is it Christensen or Rudiger or Zuma? Zuma is absolutely third in that choice. Yeah, yeah. Christensen is second and Rudiger's first choice when he's fit.
And also Luiz has never been one for playing wonderfully in small games.
Jonathan, I think the bigger issue, my old chum, is this. And this, I think, definitely does involve Luiz, really, because this is what I was thinking. I think there are two things going on here. One, we got found out in defence the last time we played 4-2-3-1. When was that? You and I both know because we were there. 3-0 against Arsenal at the Emirates, and I think it was October. Can't remember the year now, thankfully. But
it was the season that you won the title, 2016-17.
He changed it in the second half.
Yeah.
But basically what was happening was that Luiz was getting exposed for his lack of pace in that game. And guess what, children? Kante was playing as a defensive midfielder as well. So he ain't going to stop the rot there, because the other issue that we've got at the moment, of course, is we've not got a Kante who's fit. And I expect Kante, if he's fit, to be one of the two in midfield with either Kovacic or Jorginho. But I'm still worried that a 4-2-3-1 is going to leave Luiz exposed in a flat back four.
Indeed.
And it's going to be really interesting to see how that evolves, because we know how it went with Conte. He went, oh my God, this isn't going to work. And he changed it.
But is Zuma, he's quicker than Luiz, but is he as intelligent as a footballer? Has he has that ability to play those fantastic long balls?
And he's not a leader.
And he's not, no.
Luiz is all of these
things.
He's
a great character, Luiz.
He is also a complete pain in the A.
Yeah.
And he's going to make absolutely horrendous ricks and drive you up the Swanee.
He will, as always.
But he's still all of those things.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd have him in my side every day of the week. But I do think Rudiger's the key. And we're going to talk about that because we've got a bit of walking wounded and he's one of them. We're going to miss Rudiger. He's our best defender.
What do you think, Chidge, about the fact that here's Frank touted as this great leader of youth, and he will get access to so many of these the winners, the Youth Cup winners, and that game against United, Mount may be the only one who has an opportunity.
I don't think any of them are
going to start. I don't think he will either. I think he'll be on the bench.
No, well, Mark, we talked about this with Matt the other week. Marco and I basically pretty much picked the team that played last season minus Hazard. Yeah. I think sure it's going to be a different system, and I think Barkley will get the number 10 slot. So it'll be,
the Barkley Kovacic swap won't happen.
William Barkley Pedro.
Yeah.
And I still think he'll go Giroud up front because he's tried and tested and experienced. And, you know, I think what will happen, I think the difference is that he will have Abraham on the bench. He will have Pulisic on the bench. He will have Mount on the bench. And he will have them on a bench with the intent to bring them on to have an impact. Yeah. Not just to, you know, keep Roman off his back, which is what I think all the other managers have done. You know, there won't be any bring him on for 2 minutes and we can say we played the youth. I think if Frank thinks it's going a bit pear-shaped or he needs something that one of these three players can give, he'll do it.
Which is what he did for Derby.
Exactly.
Because who was the young player he kept bringing on towards the end at Derby who was played out of his skin?
Matt will know. He likes
it wasn't
football.
Wilson. It was the other one.
Jack Marriott? Was it?
Yeah, Marriott, yeah. Who played wonderfully for Derby. Wonderfully when he brought him on. And because also you felt that he was G'd up to play that well. You felt that whether he was actually that good, you suddenly thought the energy that this guy has brought coming on, which we really do hope that players have if they want to get into the first team or want just to establish themselves, is they come on as a sub and they're not shrinking violets. They go, I'm going to grab this game by the throat.
But I think he's going to make them feel 10 foot tall. I mean, a lot of the gist of what we've seen, this is actually perhaps more important than, you know, how good are the performances, the results been in pre-season. Look at the impact that the appointment of Frank and his coaching staff have had on the team. Everybody in that squad thinks that they're going to have a chance. Everybody in that squad thinks they're going to be treated fairly. Everybody in that squad wants to play for a guy who is the greatest player Chelsea have ever had. So the entire mood in that squad is a million miles away from what it was last season and the season before that and the season before that and the season before that.
And also, can I just say what the qualities that Lampard has as well is that they're willing to make videos of him, and because he is such an excellent marketing device and PR man.
You get a lovely black suit,
by the way. Yeah, he wears it well, doesn't he? But also,
he's out Conte and Conte.
He comes across as actually being more transparent, because when you ask him a question,
he does answer it.
But also he can answer it, because the poor previous managers didn't have a grasp of English to be able to come across as being nice enough chaps.
They might as well have been speaking in Latin, and Frank's got an A level in Latin. So
I thought it was an O level.
A level,
isn't it a GCSE?
No, it's an A level.
I stand corrected. Yeah. In Latin,
I researched this.
I see. Amoa Massamat.
Cerberus est.
Yeah.
What levels have we moved on to this podcast, fellas? I've got to say,
I failed my Latin mock, by the way.
Did you?
Yeah, transparent. I got 7%.
I passed.
Yeah, you went to a private school.
Yeah, sorry about that.
And I went to public, Chavvy, you know, comprehensive.
Chavvy public school.
No, comprehensive.
I am going to bring this back to football, fellas.
We almost came to blows.
Really,
I know that.
Really?
I think you're right with Mason Mount and Tammy Abraham there, because let's not forget that's 20 and 21 respectively. So they're both still young.
Yep.
They've definitely had the conversation with Frank Lampard about what is going to happen next season. I think that Chelsea are essentially being written off by the media and a lot of fans, but I think it's going to be quite a surprising campaign next season. When you talk about the starting lineup, I know we went through it last week, Chidge, with Marco, but the game against Salzburg as well is what people were suggesting might be that starting lineup with Kepa, Jorginho, Barkley, Abraham.
Did you hear that apparently they asked for Chelsea to play their strongest team in the first half?
Right.
Part of the deal to have them, so that's what he chose. But my fear, I think when Loftus-Cheek comes back, and when I'm not convinced that Odoi will get in as a consequence of this, which will offend so many people who think once he's back and fit, he'll be there.
He'll start again, because he's going to come back from a really nasty injury. That's his problem.
Yeah, but that could be an excuse for Frank if it's all working, because otherwise, where do you fit them all in? But I think actually also Loftus-Cheek was so good last season, particularly towards the end, that I think you've got to expect that he will find a place for himself.
Yes, he will. I mean, the beautiful thing that is evolving and developing at the moment, and okay, this is all great on paper before we've even kicked a ball, but it's shaping up to actually have a really competitive squad when everybody's fit, and also some transition and development, because, you know, at the moment you're going to have William, as Glenn Hodder would say, and Pedro, but not for much longer. They're over 30. Their natural heirs are already there. Pedro, Pulisic and Hudson-Odoi. You've now got Barkley and duking it out, possibly, in the number 10 role. Although you know that Ruben can probably play in a more Jorginho role, playing a lot deeper. So there's real flexibility, and and of course you've got Mason Mount to factor into that as well. I mean, suddenly we've got real competition, and the interesting thing is I think a lot of that competition is coming from the younger players.
Yes.
Isn't it, boss?
I think you're absolutely
great.
Right.
Isn't it?
Just a word on, sorry, John. Just no, a no. word on William. It was reported last week that this new contract had come to be. It hasn't happened yet, has it? They're still in negotiations about contract talks for him. I mean, that's going to get over the line, right?
Yeah. I don't see why not. I mean, we've only got basically, it'll be all over by this time next week, round at the transfer window.
August the 8th, shortly before the Premier League campaign begins. Speaking of William, he has been on the sidelines recently, and that is what we're going to be discussing next.
Yeah. Love Sport.
It's Love Sport and the Chelsea Fan Show. Me, Matt Beadle, Stamford Chidge, desperate to talk. You might have just heard his dulcet tones
there.
I think
I cut out before you cut in.
And Jonathan Kidd joining me as well. I like that. Every time, is that one of those things? Every time I say Jonathan Kidd, you're going to say it. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. It's a thing.
Right.
If you thump him with something, it stops, apparently.
Okay. Chaps, I want to talk about this script that has been released from BT Sport this week. Yeah. Very, very interesting. This is something that's
Do you
been
know
powered...
what it's all about?
Well, it's been powered by Google, Opta and Squawker. Basically, it's a prediction ahead of the new campaign. Yeah. So they're predicting who's going to be top of the league, who's going to win the Golden Boot, who's going to beat who's going to have more assists. Quite frankly, it's a load of old tripe.
Yeah, you're not happy, are you?
And it's getting people talking, which is the purpose of it.
Well, I think, you know, from what I understand, I got it emailed to me, actually, because, funnily enough, I know the agency involved. But you're right, exactly that. I can't remember exactly where the sources are. And stupidly, I didn't print off the front page, which would have told me that. But I think it's they've got Opta involved, Google. I mean,
Squawker, yeah. It's all about artificial intelligence and figuring out who's going to beat who. I've got to tell you, it's a topsy-turvy campaign for Chelsea, according to the script. So
we'll get on to that in a minute. The first thing I was going to say, which in terms of what you just said, and what I mean, I think we all think it's a load of bunkum, basically. But the hilarious thing, I saw this on Twitter, and I should have saved it, but David Luiz tweeted last night a picture of this, the front cover of this, and he had a red spray can of paint, and he just put a big cross through it.
Brilliant.
And said that, basically, I can't remember exactly what he said, but it was along the lines of, you can't script what we do. Dreams are unscripted.
But it's very interesting that they've based their advertising this evening in The Standard on that very premise, because all four pictures are...
It's so transparent, really, isn't it?
Man U finished sixth, aren't in the Champions League. Spurs haven't won anything again. Arsenal, who
aren't
in the Champions League, and we beat them. And Liverpool, right, who won the Champions League. So we have clearly been, it's been decided that they hate us as well, but also by this...
You just have to look at the number of Liverpool pundits they employ.
Well, every time. Well, that's the same with everywhere,
I've got to say, whilst...
Do you know how many Liverpool pundits there are on TV?
About
47.
47.
Ex-Liverpool players punditing on football, Matt.
Do you know
we keep a tally at Chelsea, you
Do you know what?
Now, I'll bring it in next week.
Now, Chidge, we've had this debate before.
27 McManamans.
We've had this debate before, and I get it. That ultimately, and I remember speaking to Steve McManaman, actually, about this, and he
said... Through a translator?
He said...
No, what did he say?
Let's be realistic in the sense that... The pundits at the moment on football are primarily from the teams that were successful 10, 20, 30 years ago, right? So ultimately...
Liverpool haven't won the Premier League.
I know, but...
That was 30 years ago.
I'm going to 30 years ago. Okay, but if you think about those Liverpool players of the past, Graham Souness, Steve McManaman...
Wonderful bloke.
Absolutely.
He's now pensionable age.
So yeah, and he does all right at Sky Sports, to be fair. And sometimes Graham Souness speaks a lot of sense.
Souness was one of my... I don't care he was a Liverpool player.
I actually don't think Souness is biased. Souness is on the ball,
he was one of my favourite players, Graham Souness. If I, when I grow up, I want to be like Graham Souness and have a perm and a tash and kick people for fun. Yeah. I loved him. Got no problem with Suey. It's the younger breed that I don't like.
So go on.
Well, I mean, the McManamans, the Robbie Fowlers and all of this. How many Premier Leagues have they won? I'm waiting.
But sure, I understand that, but their experience in the game is invaluable, isn't it?
Well, Macca, to be fair, I mean, he did win the Champions League with Real Madrid.
And what I would say, actually...
But they're blatantly biased, Matt.
Yeah, and to support your argument...
They're as biased as I would be if I was doing it.
Okay, I'm going to support your argument here, as biased as you are right now, is that a gent coming through the ranks by the name of Liam Rossignol... He's actually making them all look quite silly.
Yeah,
because he never
Liam's
got to
brilliant.
The top end of the game. Of course, he played in the Premier League with Brighton, but he's absolutely brilliant. Very coherent, very good knowledge of the game.
But nobody knows who he is because he didn't play for Liverpool. Remember, I worked in television for 25 years,
Yeah, this is
Matt.
The problem there.
So
yeah.
I do kind of have an inside view on this. And I work, for example, I see your Liam Rossignol and I raise you Steve Claridge. Steve works hard at his punditry. He actually bothers to work at it. He treats it like a job.
Where's he gone?
Well, exactly, because he's Steve Claridge. I mean, I worked with Steve for years, and I used to have this conversation. I have had conversations with Steve, and he would sit there and plaintively look at me saying, I don't understand why this is. And I said, because you didn't play for Liverpool, Steve, you know, basically. It was a bit of a longer conversation than that, but that was the crux of it. And you're right. And this is the problem that Liam Rossignol is going to have. And yet both Claridge, who, I mean, his understanding of the game is brilliant. His reading and analysis of the game is brilliant. I've watched Liam Rossignol equally so. And that's who we should be having on our screens. And actually, not just Liam's and Claridge's. Get some of these women analysts on who are also shaking the game up. You know, I'd love to see this shaken up and stop this awful red cabal.
I agree
very
with
well
you.
Very well expressed.
I do agree with you. It was very well expressed.
Yeah.
A compelling argument from you there,
Clip
Stanford
that one
Chidge.
Out.
But
mic drop.
I do think as well, I think that perception is becoming more and more outmoded, and I do think the newer audience are starting to like the likes of Rossignol and Steve Claridge, even though he's not there anymore. Well, I think you'll start to see those characters coming back.
They almost want to see themselves, though. I think it's more what they want pundits from the terraces who can actually express themselves and have a view.
The whole thing's
changing,
isn't it?
Yeah.
God almighty, that means people like us. Right, I'll go back to what I say. Okay. For little Liverpool pundits, you don't want to be listening to us.
So going back to our original point here was that you were saying that BT Sport weren't in favour of Chelsea. However...
No, I think they were. I don't think they are in terms of their kind of bias in what they you know,
but,
present.
But on this script...
This script was nuts. They had us at top, for Christmas.
So you're finishing fourth, you're top at Christmas for roughly 5 weeks or so. However... It would be the first time that Chelsea failed to win the Premier League after topping the table at Christmas. You go 7 games without a win midway through the season. And Liverpool beat Mourinho's 05-06 defensive record when you conceded just 6 goals in 18 games. And quite crucially here, no wins over the big six at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah, I mean,
That's where you fall foul.
Who knows? And I'm not as kind of cross about this as maybe I should be. I think it is a bit of innocent fun, and I can understand where their analysis would lead it to. And I think it's no surprise, in a sense, if you look at the overview, they've gone very obvious with who's going to finish in the top four. They have us squeaking United out to finish four. But you look at who they think is going to get relegated. So they're not really... What they can't do with this kind of computer analysis, because they're going upon historical data and they're extrapolating
and presumption...
But what they can't do is pick an outlier like Leicester the other year, you know, and I think that's where it will come down. But of course, what they haven't factored in is how nobody knows, not least of all us, what on earth Chelsea are going to be like this season. We've not really added to the squad. We've got a brand new manager who's inexperienced. All of these things. Nobody knows how this is going to pan out for Chelsea. Although, having said that, and I said this in an argument with somebody in the pub the other day, the majority of that squad won the title a couple of years ago, so they can't be that bad.
Absolutely not. And I think that ultimately, just to defend BT Sport here, this is a bit of fun.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of fun. And
we're talking about it. And I've got to say, the amount of work that's gone into this, by the way, must have taken them forever. There's so many debates to have about it. I'm just going to close it on the fact that they think Raheem Sterling's going to get most assists with 13. Second most assists?
Go on.
Alex Iwobi.
Yeah, that's a bit of an
11.
Outlier, isn't it?
I mean, what are you basing? I think they only like it because apparently he then equals the all-time assists from his uncle, JJ Okocha. I think that was just a nice little line.
That's sweet, actually.
The interesting thing,
he was a good player, wasn't he?
Very good player.
They've kind of answered our question from earlier on, actually, because they've basically got, Willian, it looks here, has got about 7 goals, Abraham about 8.
He's got 15.
It's 10. 10 to 10. And then basically the goals are shared between William Abraham. Really? Oh.
Yeah, it says he's got 15.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I don't understand that.
But I don't think
he'd
even
then.
Play. But I think
the point is that they're saying that the goals are shared about. They've got Hudson-Odoi in there. So, I mean, you know, that I find odd because, you know, he's injured and he ain't coming back for a while. So I think it's a bit of fun. By the way, I put this up on our website, on the ChelseaFancast.com website, if anybody's interested and wants to have a read of it. So there we go.
Okay. Nice.
Well, I slightly misunderstood because I presumed that they meant that we were going to finish sixth, but fourth, yeah.
Quarter final of the Champions League.
Oh, wow.
Can't see that happening.
Right.
We'll get out of the group stage.
We are going to move on to our Legend of the Week after this, but we were going to discuss walking wounded.
We were.
Willian obviously out at the moment. Conte still struggling to be fit for that first game against United. Loftus-Cheek, we know, is going to be back in November. Rudiger back in September. Callum Hudson-Odoi, we don't quite know yet. So are we happy with the way the squad is at the moment? And are we concerned that Conte and Willian might not be in the squad for that United game?
I'll answer that first, or shall I?
You answer it, yeah.
Kante's the biggest concern for me. I still think that, I mean, we said it in the last two seasons, actually. After Hazard, he was probably our most important player. Some would argue that he was more important than Hazard. So I think, if he is not fit, that's a big worry for me. From what I understand, Willian and Kante are expected to be back fit for United, but his injury is a concern because it doesn't seem going away. Willian, less so, not because I don't like Willian. I would have him, you know, as my first pick, whatever, because I have a suspicion that with Hazard gone, Willian might come into his own this year, as he often did when he played and Hazard didn't. But we've got Pulisic. So, you know, you've got cover for Willian. You don't have cover for Kante. Nobody covers Kante. Nobody could ever cover Kante. The others, Rudiger is a big miss, but, you know, we seem to be quite well stacked for defenders. Ruben Loftus-Cheek back in, they reckon, 2nd of November. Rudiger back 14th of September.
Reece James is training at the moment, isn't he?
He's just in his op, so I'd be surprised.
I read an article.
I think Hudson-Odoi's training.
He was there wandering around. Perhaps he's just doing strength training and starting.
I think it's Hudson-Odoi who's back up
on his
feet.
I've seen him doing tricks. Yeah.
I don't think I could be wrong, but I think James has only just had an op, so I don't think he'll be training. And I would imagine Loftus-Cheek's just doing fitness work. I don't think he'll be doing ball work yet. But I don't know. You know, what do I know? I'm not a Cobham.
Well, you know plenty, Stanford Chidge, yes. And a certain individual that I'm sure you know heaps about is going to be coming up after this, because we're going to move on to our legend of the week. Love Sport. This is Love Sport. We're into the final 14 minutes or so of the Chelsea Fan Show. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the guys from the Chelsea Fancast, Stanford Chidge and Jonathan Kidd. I love this part of the show because we be a bit nostalgic and we get into some retro football. It is our Legend of the Week. Stanford Chidge, please reveal this week's Legend of the Week.
Well, I mean, actually, funnily enough, I tried to shoehorn this in the first show that we did the Legends of the Week. But Johnny Burrow basically pulled the rug from under my feet, and I turned up to the studio and he changed it to Petr Cech, because that was when Petr Cech had arrived that week. But, you know, Frank Lampard... I'll just come straight out with it. As far as I'm concerned, he's my favourite player of Chelsea of all time. I think he's he's the greatest goal scorer of all time. This we know. A phenomenal achievement for a midfielder to score 211 goals for Chelsea. But I think he's the greatest player that we've ever had for so many reasons. It's not just his ability, not just his goal scoring record. It's his work ethic, his determination, his willpower, the desire to improve his game. I mean, I remember when Frank signed, actually, and I remember that season that he was awful. We actually thought, what a waste of money. Well, not everybody, but a lot of us thought, what a waste of money.
And he was a bit tubby, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he's Fat Frank, 12 million quid, and we actually called him Frank Lamppost because his movement was so non-existent in midfield. But he's worked at his game so hard. He's also worked really hard to come from West Ham and all the links that he had with his dad and everything, to become as much a part of Chelsea as we all are. I mean, he gets us. And I've met Frank, and he gets us. I get all emotional here. I mean, he's absolutely...
It's without a tear, Chidge,
isn't I've met him a few times, and he's a lovely bloke, but just an absolute model professional footballer. I mean, we will not see his like again, I don't think. He had that... For me, he's kind of a weird...
Hybrid.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was struggling for. He's a hybrid between the kind of the old school type players that we grew up with and the modern player. You kind of fuse the two together in some weird way, and I just cannot see that kind of player. And he's got a lot of humility as well. He's not an arrogant shit. He's not like Pogba, you know. He's unique, absolutely unique, and without a doubt the greatest player of all time for Chelsea, and I think he will always be the
greatest
player of all time.
Such a shame that he couldn't... translate that into success for England, because they've normally played him out in the wrong position.
Yeah, I know.
That's one of those ongoing debates, isn't it? That you just it's so difficult. It's a real head scratcher when you think we had the likes. And I know this is a really simple argument because we've had it for years and years and years and years.
It was all Sven's fault.
It was massively, and he tried to crowbar in Paul Scholes as a left midfielder, of course. Right. But I saw Frank Lampard at 2004 in the Euros there, and he was brilliant.
Wasn't he?
He was really, really good. Then I saw him again in 2006 and he was not brilliant.
No.
And that game against Portugal, Ronaldo, the shove on Rooney and all the rest of it.
Missed penalty.
He was really poor that day, and he just looked like he was starting to run out of batteries a little bit.
They'd been worked hard for 2 years by Mourinho, because I think actually this does deserve a bit of context, but they had been worked really hard for 2 years by Mourinho, and he did work them hard. They'd won the double. Well, I say the double. They won back-to-back titles. They'd also, I think, that season had we got knocked out. Was that one of the Liverpool? It was, wasn't it, when we got knocked out by Liverpool?
Yeah.
So they'd had an exhausting season. So I think maybe you can write it down to that. Because if you go further on in other tournaments he was, I think we can allow him a bad day at the office, Matt.
No, absolutely. I'm going into the argument of the fact that it never really works for England, but that's not just Frank Lampard. That's a hell of a load of those golden generation players.
When you look at a match that I don't like to ever remember, but the 2008 Champions League final, Frank was the player the best player on the pitch, both sides. I mean, you'll remember the game well.
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
He was the best player on the pitch by a country mile.
He was
mile.
Phenomenal.
Like, yeah, he scored as well,
not just by a little bit, by a country mile. I know I'm biased and all the rest of it, but he really was. This guy was a phenomenal player.
For all of his stats, and the fact that he's Chelsea's leading goal scorer of all time and was a legend at the club, how did you feel, honestly, about the New York City / Manchester City move? The fact that he ended up playing at the Etihad, he scored against Chelsea. I know he came out and said it was a bit of a weird experience for me, but was that not a bit strange that he went to Man City?
I think you just have to accept the fact that they came in for him, and it meant that he could play another season in the Premier League. But in one's heart, one is going, Frank, no, yeah, how could you do that? But from a just professional point of view, it was another experience for him, and he's been forgiven. Obviously, there was a period where people booed him, I think, in that season, because there were people on social media was in its infancy, but people were still slagging him off.
But one or two in a stadium of 42,000 people, you're going to get a few village idiots. And even Chelsea. I mean, I remember that bloke with the banner.
I think there were more than a few. Yeah, there was exactly the bloke with the banner.
Really,
absolutely.
I think you're over-egging it a bit. Didn't bother me at all that he went.
No, it didn't bother me. I'm talking about other members.
Yeah, but I don't think there were as many as you were saying that there were.
I think there were a few.
I really don't.
Where I sat, I'm afraid, in the prawn sandwich environment, people really hated him for going.
I don't really count them.
Okay,
to be honest. I count you.
Am I allowed?
I'll get through then.
No,
because you kind of are there by default.
Okay. What have I sneaked in there?
Well, no, because you were there before Ken Bates invented it.
Yes, I was.
Well, I know.
Yeah.
Okay, chaps, we're going to finish on this Frank Lampard segment. Just your greatest Frank Lampard memory, your favourite moment.
It's when he scored that penalty after his mum died. It was just, I mean, I'm trying to remember where I think it was actually round that side of the stadium. Because I get moved when they have a Champions League match, because I sit at the back and they've got the TV stuff.
You don't mean emotionally moved, you actually get physically moved.
I got physically moved round to where he celebrated at the corner flag. I was in the upper tier in the Matthew Harding. I wasn't in the... I was in the upper tier, but I was behind the goal where Darren sits down there. Yeah. But, I mean, the emotion in the stadium... I mean, it was a mental match anyway, I think, if you recall, but... Yeah, the emotion, just because it was Liverpool, because it was the Champions League, but because everybody knew that... I mean, everybody didn't even think he would be playing. I mean, his mum had died literally 2 days before or something.
Yeah.
It was just massive.
For me, it was just scoring against Bolton.
Yeah,
for the league title.
I was lucky enough to be there.
You weren't there.
No, you were. You were.
I got hugged by so many complete strangers. I find it so difficult to deal with, but, you know, being so terribly aware of my personal space as I am, you know, slightly... OCD.
Must be life changing.
It was completely life changing. The woman next to me, I was slightly worried about that, but she asked me for my phone.
I hope you said no tongues.
Yeah. No, I was willing to go along with that.
a great way to finish this week's Legend of the Week.
Brilliant.
This is the Chelsea Fan Show. Just a quick bit of news. Football is, of course, back. This evening, Championship New Boys Luton hosting Championship Old Boys Middlesbrough, and the away side have just taken the lead. Ashley Fletcher with the goal. Middlesbrough are leading 1-0 at Luton. Right, gents, the Premier League is very nearly upon us. Next week, you will be running out against Manchester United, but there is a friendly before that, the final friendly against Borussia Mönchengladbach. Going to that one, Phyllis?
No, we'll be watching it, but we don't go, do we, Chich? That kind of
thing. We get other people to do that.
Yeah,
for
we do that
man.
For us. Right. Yeah. Of course, my man will be going. My man servant will go, and he'll give me a.
I'd love to have gone.
Rendition.
I actually would really have liked to have gone to see Mönchengladbach. I remember them when I was a kid. I used to call the Borussia Mönchengladbach to be back, as you do when you're
seven.
You
do when you're seven.
You know?
Yes,
but they had a good side in the '70s. Actually, yeah. I don't know really anything about them at all.
The question is, will he play Drink Water and Baki Yoko?
I would, just for laughs.
Just for the hell of it.
Just to annoy people.
Yeah. I was intrigued by Baki Yoko's complete inability to pass in the very first game, and people are saying, it's the first game of the season, it's a friendly. And you think, no, really, in the world.
It's a pattern.
Yeah, if you go for an audition and you think, I won't be bothered, that's it, you're out the door.
If you acted in auditions like Baki Yoko plays for Chelsea, you would never have worked in your life.
I don't know, I'm worried now, because I think it's the opposite now. I think because you're so laid back and people go,
he's so interesting. I think I'll cast him.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it's all changed. Can I just put an interesting fact that I've got, which is that...
Before you do, because it relates to the game on Saturday, I think he will pretty much start tomorrow with the team that he's going to start against United, by the way.
Interesting.
Because now it's about getting into the rhythm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sorry, just wanted to
Fine. Just an interesting point before we go. there's a video of Pepe saying that... who's just signed for Arsenal.
Pepe,
I'm so sorry. Was it 75 million? Yeah. Saying, Chelsea are the only team for me.
He's gone to the, he took the wrong turn, did he, on the North Circular?
It was a bit like, who was it? The Brazilian who played, thought he was signing for Chelsea and signed for Man City. Rabinho, yeah, well done. Yeah, exactly. The same.
This is a video that's out now on social media.
Yeah, it's been shown around with him going, I want to play for Chelsea. They're the only team for me, he's saying. Not necessarily in that accent.
In his Arsenal kit?
No. That would be foolish. No, before. This was beforehand.
Well, he comes from Lille, which, of course...
It would be like that.
Eden Hazard played for Lille, didn't he?
That's right, he did. Yeah.
Yeah, so there we go.
Yeah. And Claude Makélélé, of course, is back for the Blues because he's taking over from what Eddie Newton used to do with the youth. Yeah,
he's a good, really good. Proper coach. He could get a first team job with somebody. He's good enough.
Yeah.
So there you go.
He absolutely is good enough, fellas. And we'll be back this time again next. What day is it? That's Friday, isn't it?
Losing track
of the days. Friday night ahead of that first game against Manchester United. It is the Chelsea Fancast on Love Sport Radio. We will see you same time next week.
You will.
This is Love Sport. Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.